This time on the Magic Kitchen podcast, we're discussing animal harm within the craft. I'm Leandra Witchwood.
And I'm Elise Wells.
And welcome to the Magic Kitchen podcast, where we talk about magic, kitchen witchcraft, herbs,
and everything in between.
So recently on social media, I have been seeing a lot of discussion and banter and arguing even over the idea of using animals in the craft, for one, and the concept or the act of harming animals to be used in your craft. And I know I have a lot of strong, strong opinions on this. Elise, I'm sure you do too. And we're going to discuss them this time on the Magic Kitchen podcast to give you a perspective of why we feel the way we feel, and maybe even a perspective of why other practitioners would not feel the same, and then allow you to come up with the solution or the practice that best suits your practice. And I know this is going to get, for some, it's going to become a trigger. It's going to become something that, you know, may enrage some listeners. I know the comments I've been reading and the backtracking I've been seeing from a lot of creators is very interesting to watch. And yeah, it does. It makes me angry too, to see some of this where they, you know, proclaim something and then they get a lot of backlash and all of a sudden they change their mind on it, or they, you know, quote unquote, clarify their position. So I'm hoping that we can be very clear about our position in this matter. And, you know, if you want to learn from us, you're going to learn from us and you're going to learn from our perspective. And that's acceptable. That's okay. You don't have to listen to someone else who is telling you that you should be doing something when you feel in your heart that it's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's where we should start. Is I personally feel that there is never, capital N, capital E, capital V, capital E, capital R, a time that hurting an animal is okay. It doesn't matter. There's just no reason to do it in your magical practice. If your goal is to, you know, find love by sacrificing an animal, how in the world is that going to work? How is that energetically going to be the right thing? If, like some spells say, some ancient spells, you know, you want to contact Tecate, we know dogs are sacred to her, so we'll just sacrifice a dog to her. Why would she want that? It just does not add up. It just does not make sense. And I'm not going to test it out to see if it works, but I just can't imagine it does. And what would be so worth doing that you would want to have that kind of suffering and like visceral experience on your hands? Like, what would be worth that? I just can't think of anything.
I can't. Yeah. Again, like I have strong opinions on this too. And for me, in my craft, because I can only speak from my perspective, the way I was trained and the ideals and morals and ethics that I hold within my craft. Yeah. Never. Capital everything, all caps. There's never a reason to harm an animal. Now, the reason for this in my craft is because if I feel squeamish about something, if I feel that it is wrong, if I feel that it is changing my vibration in a spell, because where do we do spells? Where do we do our work? We do it in the liminal. This is where the power is. And we connect with those energies within that liminal space and bring it into the physical world to make change. So if I am reaching into that liminal space and I am conducting myself in a way that is not in alignment with my own values, my own morals, my own ethics. And the morals and ethics of the world I live in, then I am not working in alignment with that spell. So it's not going to work for me. Now, that's not to say that some other practitioner out there has no issue and no qualms, no moral regard to harming animals. And that's their craft. That's the energy they have to deal with themselves. But in my craft, you will not see me harming an animal. You will not see me wrongfully or making a justification to kill an animal for a body part or to take a body part that is not mine to take, that is not gifted to me in some ethical fashion.
If you're a newer witch and you're looking at these debates on social media, or you're seeing practitioners writing in books put out by publishers about animal sacrifice, right, or animal, and that's two different things. We're going to talk about that too, about using, yes, animals in the craft. It can be very confusing. So what we want to do in this episode is not weigh in and take down other witches and tell you what not to read or what not to do. Instead, we're just going to go into a little bit of the history, a little bit of the precedence for where animal usage in spells, ritual, and magic can come from, so that you can have just some information on this subject, because it is something that is being talked about now, whether it should be or not. You know, maybe I like to think that when things come up, it's because there's something in the collective consciousness that needs to be healed and needs to be discussed.
Yes.
So yes, I think this is a good time to discuss it. So hopefully your questions get answered here. And if they don't, you can always reach out to us. We're happy to talk more about it. Send us your questions, and we can always add on some questions at the end of an episode in the future too, for other listeners, if it's a big helpful topic.
Yeah. And don't forget that we also, after each episode airs initially, we take the next Wednesday and we go deeper into each episode. So if this is something that is really sticking with you, that you want to learn more about it, please join us. Like, we will sit there and we talk for a good hour, sometimes longer, if it's a really heated subject, which this one kind of is, where we go really deep into it and you can talk with us directly about your concerns or your perceptions or your, clarify things that need to be clarified.
Mm-hmm. And share your stories, share your conversations you've had, because there is so much going on in this world at all times and there's so many different backgrounds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it can insane. Be hard to decide what to do, and then we kind of feel paralyzed. So we don't want that to happen to you in any form with anything in your spiritual path. So just bring it to us. We'll talk it through.
The Magic Kitchen Podcast is funded and supported by thewitchwoodteahouse.com, offering a variety of hand-blended loose leaf teas as well as loose herbs for all of your ritual, spell work, wellness, and everyday enjoyment needs. If you would like to support this podcast while sipping a great cup of tea, head over to thewitchwoodteahouse.com and find the magic that's in store for you.
There's a difference between using an animal for magic and sacrificing an animal. So we want to start there. So we talked a lot about sacrifices in our episode a few episodes ago, season 5, episode 4, where we talked about offerings. Yes. And if you're a meat-eating person, sacrifice is a part of your diet. It's something you probably do every day, yes, in a sense. And in some cultures, Islam is one. I lived in the Middle East when I was growing up. I lived in Bahrain, and I traveled across lots of different countries. And at the end of Ramadan, at the first Eid, goats are ritually sacrificed. And it can look pretty horrific. Like, I remember the first time I saw this, literally, I remember viscerally watching blood run through the streets because every family kills a goat. And in Islam, they also believe that you can't just eat any meat. You have to eat meat that was killed halal, which means with a special prayer being said over the animal, and then they're killed specifically with a knife in a certain way so that the animal isn't going to suffer. And also that has to do with the way they're cared for too. They can't be in you know, like a super tight enclosed area their whole life. They have to have had a decent lifestyle. So that can sound brutal. It can be something from the outside that seems maybe outdated or just not for you. And maybe it's still not for you, but, and it's not for me. I don't think I could kill an animal with my own bare hands, but I'm a hypocrite because I do eat them. So sacrificing animals, especially for consumption, especially in a way that is spiritually grounded, like the halal practice of Islam, it's not the same as when we say harming an animal for your magic, you know, for a love spell, for a curse, for a hex. That's something very different.
It is. And I remember a few years ago, there was a video of a family sacrificing their goats. And I believe it was for this, the purpose you were just talking about. And there's nothing malice about it. There was no, it was a very sacred practice. And that's the difference between sacrificing an animal for consumption and then using that animal in all of its parts to fuel other aspects of your magical practice. But to the outsider who's, you know, doesn't understand the religion, doesn't understand the sacred practice, it can look like, oh my God, you're just killing an animal, but not realizing that animal is dinner, that animal is nourishment. The same with swines. In Celtic practices, swines were believed to be the one animal that could freely roam between the worlds. And swine herders were sacred in that aspect too. So to consume a swine was to be in honor of that, but it's also nourishment. It's necessary for survival. And, you know, maybe not so much now, but back, you know, ancient time of our ancestors, yeah, you needed to eat. And if the swine was the only thing you had, then you would sacrifice it, quote unquote, in a very sacred way to not only show reverence for the deities that preside over the animal, but also for the magical aspects of that animal. It is a sacred practice. It's not just killing an animal because you want a body part and then you discard the rest.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's not going to be an easy yes or no to using animals in the craft. Like I wouldn't use an animal that I had to hurt with my own hands. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't, for that purpose, for the purpose of anything selfish for me, which, because magic is for ourselves most of the time. I just can't see why that would be necessary.
Well, okay. But, and think about the energy that you would end up creating from that, because you would feel an apprehension, an adverse reaction to killing the animal yourself. That would leak into your spell. And it would backfire somehow. There would be a backfire. There would be a repercussion that you could not control.
Yep. Yeah. But if I want to do a spell for, you know, for, I'm trying to think of one that would even use this because it's just not part of my practice. But
no,
like if you wanted a part of an animal, like a pig's foot or a chicken leg, or you can get that from a butcher. You don't have to actually go killing things. You know, and I use bones in my practice when I find them. Mm-hmm. If I find a nice fresh bone that's already been, nature did its thing, and it is now just a nice white bone, I'm happy to take that home and, you know, take that as a gift from spirit. But yeah, there's ways you can still honor some older practices and beliefs that do use more spells that use animals. Because I don't think it's a common thing today. I've really never come across a modern spell that I don't, would recommend that.
No. Well, and I think there's a difference between ancient traditional witchcraft and modern traditional witchcraft. And this is where the divide comes from. And I think this is where a lot of confusion comes from of how one person practices compared to another. Modern traditional witchcraft is going to observe modern ideals, modern practices, modern morals and values.
Yeah.
And that also means we view in this day and age, in our culture, animal harm is frowned upon. You know, animal abuse, child abuse, elder abuse of any kind is going to be very well defined. And it's going to be something we don't engage in. It's not okay. So when we incorporate anything into our practice that is borderline or blatant animal abuse, it's it's not going to resonate with the modern practice of witchcraft. And that is, I think, something that people skirt over in these posts and in these the backtracking that I'm seeing. They're not recognizing that ancient practices, they viewed animals very, very differently than we do now. Yeah. You know,
very utilitarian.
Animals were an absolute tool. They were a resource. They were not viewed as necessarily as sentient beings unless they were the practitioners who revered the deity or the practice or the genre of where that animal fell in. But still, they would still use the animal parts because, you know, the hawk heart was sacred to the Egyptians and they followed that pantheon and it was okay then. But now it's not. We recognize that there's other things we can use instead of an actual physical hawk heart. We can use herbs. We can use animal allies instead of the actual animal.
Yeah. It might sound like a paradox, but traveling to new places is often more grounding than staying home. If you're nervous to be out of your comfort zone and would like to travel, but you're not sure how it fits into your life, or if you're somebody who does travel but wants to get the most out of it, this is the workshop for you. Join me July 22nd at noon EDT for Spirit-Led Travel, connecting with new spirits of place and land. And get a recording of the workshop when you buy a ticket as well. You can find this event on my Eventbrite, on seekingnumina.com, and of course in the show notes below. So let's look at history. What kind of spells would use animals in them? And we talked this through because, like we said, this isn't part of our background in our actual path to do these kinds of spells. So we've researched this. And mostly it's baneful magic. It's where you use the animal and you, this is awful, but you it's the stand-in for the victim of the curse or the hex or the binding or the banishing.
Yeah. That's sympathetic magic.
Yeah. And then the other way, weirdly, is love spells, which I really like. Astrea Taylor, she says it really well in Modern Witchcraft with the Greek Gods. She says, instead of calling it love magic, call it erotic spells. Because a lot of those spells, they weren't about love, as we would call it. There's no perfect love and perfect trust in, you know, convincing somebody, in mesmerizing somebody to fall, quote unquote, in love with you.
Love with
you. Right? It's an erotic spell. It's not really about any sort of empathy there. So I like that term, erotic spells, instead. But yeah. Also can be baneful, really. Honestly, telling somebody to do something with their emotions, like, and their body is definitely a baneful practice. So it does make sense when you think of it that way, that harming animals would be within that.
Yeah. It's about control and manipulation rather than genuine change or
the
growth.
Umbrella. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's telling too, because even though you'll see these mentioned, like throughout history, you'll see animal abuse in witchcraft mentioned in ancient Greece and ancient Rome. The Greek magical papyri, they mention that constantly. You can do a lot of those spells without it, and it's a great text to have if you're into Hellenic pantheons, Roman pantheons, or even because the Celts were so heavily influenced by the Romans. You know, the Gauls were very, very tied together. Like, it's a great book for anybody, I think, to look at. But it's with that lens of recognizing the different way animals were seen. But what they did still know in ancient Egypt, too, the ancient Greeks, the Romans, the Egyptians, they all really coalesced religiously that way. They all knew that magic took a toll. You didn't do magic alone back then. The only time you would really do something secretively is if it's a curse tablet. You wouldn't really like proclaim that to your neighbors because they might tell the cursed and then the cursed could find that tablet and destroy it. So you kept it quiet, but you would tell your priest or priestess. You would go to the temple to do it because you needed that support because you knew it was energetically draining. So they knew what we still, what today we might call karmic law or the rule of three or the Wiccan read and any harm none. We might call it something different, but they had the same concept. They just, it didn't dissuade them like it maybe should have.
No. Yeah. Well, and a lot of modern witches are solitary practitioners. So.
So you're bearing the brunt of that if you do something like this.
Yeah. And I have witnessed this firsthand, been in situations where, you know, baneful magic has been cast over to me. And the person casting it, you know, they're not going to admit they did it, but you can see the signs that they did it because all of a sudden they change. Their health changes. Their mental status changes. And you know, people, if you're practicing witchcraft, you know how to protect yourself and you're doing that every single day.
Yeah.
So if you are casting against someone else who is well protected and has very powerful deities looking after them and you're going to go at it alone, you're going to get that backlash hardcore and it's not going to be pretty and you're going to suffer. You're going to suffer a lot. So is it worth it? You know, not only did you do harden the animal, so that's on your conscience, but then the, you know, energetic backlash is going to come at you too.
Yeah.
We reap what we sow.
Even from a selfish perspective of like, well, why shouldn't I harm animals? Well, that's one. Because it's not it's going to harm you back.
It's not going to be pretty. No. And, you know, if animals are sacred to deities, then we have to believe, we have to understand, we have to know that the deity is going to look out to protect that animal.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to go and kill a raven and to claim its wing without expressed permission from the deity that looks after that raven or holds that raven sacred.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important to remember that most deities, Artemis is a really strong example coming to mind for me, deities of the hunt are also deities of protection for wildlife.
Yes.
So that's where we can see that symbolism. Some other ancient practices, because again, this isn't a modern thing, really. So there's some other ancient texts, some ancient precedents maybe for these modern practitioners who might be choosing to talk about this on TikTok, et cetera. But the ancient Egyptians, they were known to practice animals, sacrifice animal, even the PGM, the Greek magical papyri, that has a lot of Egyptian influence. Okay. So if you're interested in ancient Egyptian practice, that's a good text to go to as well. So they did use animals in spells. And the Norse, we know the Norse, not only did they practice sacrifice, like we said, that's different than using an animal for a spell, but for divination, they would sacrifice animals to do that. So, but you don't have to, you can scry without adding blood of insert animal here.
Absolutely. And or you can find, like, this is crazy to me, but you can find a plant alternative. You know, like I mentioned, the heart of a hawk, you can use wormwood instead. You know, there's not, and sometimes even there's you might see the whole Eye of Newt, right? We all know Eye of Newt, that is so iconic. What is Eye of Newt really? It's mustard seed. It's not literal. So sometimes when we're looking at these spells, these old spells, they're in code because they had to keep things quiet. They had to keep things secret because if people, you know, if the authorities or even enemies, if they found out what they were using, they could either counter or prosecute or persecute, really. So it's amazing that we take things too literally as modern witches. Not everything was so literal.
Yeah. And that's indicative of religious culture in general in this time period. You know, you'll see people who are all Christians warring with each other because some people think that the 7 days were like a literal thing in Genesis and others who say it was more symbolic, you know, like.
Right.
I don't know what's in the air for that. I don't think we're in the age of Aquarius now. I don't think that's part of it, but it kind of is with the tribal elements of that. So yeah, taking things too literally is probably not a good sign on any spiritual path.
Cause
you won't get very far. If you're like, I saw a hawk, that was a hawk. You know, like, you have to get into the symbolism a little bit, like we talked about in our last episode.
Right.
Another big root of modern witchcraft is alchemy. And alchemy is not magic. They didn't see it quite the same way. Some alchemists did, but as a yeah. whole, it really was like proto-science. And Enochian magic, John Dee was the big, I guess you could say, influence for that. And he and his students, like Edward Kelly, they were alchemists. And as part of that, just like modern science, they did a lot of experiments on animals and a lot of workings that we might today call magic. Like, they believed you could create a homunculus that could, like, be you. Like, it would just be like a little version of you that could, like, carry out tasks, almost like a golem in, like, Jewish mythology.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But those weren't animal sacrificed. Golems weren't. So alchemy got a little iffy on that. And so some of the things that came out of that, Freemasonry that evolved into different spiritual backgrounds, they may or may not have, because they still exist. So they keep things quiet. So we don't fully know exactly what they do, but they don't explicitly condemn animal usage in spells. So depending on like the background of a book you might be reading, they might have a training in, you know, Theosophical Society magic. And so they might, you know, use birds' wings and all kinds of stuff like that, that you might not expect right away. It might catch you off guard, but that's because it's coming from this, you know, like the Renaissance. It's like the Elizabethan era is when this stuff is really being written about. Paracelsus, we talked about him in our Elementals episode. This generation of people.
Yeah. Well, and think about it also, going back to the energy of it. Egregores. Egregores are that physical or non-physical entity that is associated often with a physical item. So if we're working with energy, which that's what magic is, right? And we're reading about a quote-unquote animal that needs to be sacrificed, maybe it's not so, again, not so literal. Maybe they're talking about an egregore, which shows up in Enochian traditions. It shows up in ancient Greek traditions. You know, it means, egregoros means wakeful, right? And it is that occult concept that it is a non-physical entity that can be infused into a physical item. So maybe part of what they're talking about is a root power that, you know, can be used without actual physical thing in front of you. You know, we you know, money. Money's a great egregore to talk about. We don't have to sacrifice anything for it, but we do all the time with our poor habits, or, you know, it's the energy of it. If we redirect our focus on that energy, then we can use that egregore and we can utilize the energy coming from it without killing anything.
Are you enjoying the show? If you are, we'd really appreciate a 5-star review. It helps us to reach more listeners like you and to keep doing the Magic Kitchen podcast. Thank you.
So next, let's talk about substitutions and, you know, where you find them, how do you find them, that sort of thing, and what things you can do instead of using an actual animal part. Like I mentioned, heart of a hawk, it can be wormwood. You can use, you know, mustard seed is eye of newt. So really it's about doing your research, finding those substitutions that are probably likely already there. They're plants. They're things that don't have to be necessary blood and bone. Even though witchcraft, I agree, is blood and bone, it's earth and sky. It is all of these very earthy elements, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have to go out and kill something to get the elements. It can be very plain and non-bloody, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Yeah. And it's a good reminder too, when we're doing that research, like plants are alive. Like when we go and we mm-hmm. pick a rose and we're going to use the petals for mm-hmm. something, like we're ending that bloom. So
yes.
it's not the same. It's, you know, go ahead, take the rose petals, but think about how that is still something that you are destroying in order to create something new. Because at the end of the day, all of this is a reminder of that, that spiral of life, that connection to life and death, that creation and destruction, that's always two sides of the same coin. If you like the idea of reconstructing ancient practices, I think a lot of us do, whether we fully want to or not, it's nice to look at these old spells, especially in books like the Greek Magical Papyri that are so fully in existence. You know, it wasn't destroyed. Like, we have that. It's cool. Like, it's exciting to think these are things that our ancestors did. So if you can still use those spells, you can just change it up a little bit. And the best way, the number one thing you can do to replace an animal in any of this is a poppet. And one of the most fun ways to make a poppet and the most spiritual in a way is clay, because it is the earth and you're using your hands to mold it. And remember, like we said in our witchcrafting episode, you don't have to be good. They don't have to look like the person or the, you know, whatever you're bringing protection to or whatever the spell wants you to do. Doesn't have to actually look like them. But that could be a really fun one, clay. Or if you sew, you can make a little felt doll. You could make a corn dolly, yarn dolly, paper doll, anything.
You can carve vegetables too. No, they don't. Yeah, and they like can that. Be vegetables. You know, potatoes, turnips. Turnips can be a substitute for lion's tongue. And you can carve that to be a representation. That's what it really boils down to. It's a representation. It is not an exact replica. It is a representation. And if you feel the same as we do and feel that animal sacrifice is a big no-no, you know, carving a turnip is going to be a much easier and more energetically aligned act for you.
Yeah. And that's what it always comes down to in our path, is our own morality. How are we going to skirt the gray areas? Because like Leandra started this episode speaking about, we do our work in the liminal. We live in the in-between. Yeah. That's where magic happens. So the gray areas, they're good. We don't want to skirt them and just stick to the safe stuff. No. We want to figure that out. And we want to decide. Yeah, it's a really important part of our path to be flexible on it. Because you might try something, think it's fine, and then feel kind of gross and weird about it. Like, you know, blood magic. Mm-hmm. That's a really big topic. We should probably do an episode on that soon, just in general. It is something it's tough to talk about, you know, like whether we're talking menstrual blood or small incisions on the hand, like the old fashioned way we think of, you know, it kind of freaks us out, rubs us the wrong way in the beginning and maybe for the duration. But when we take the time to think through these things and decide how we feel about morality on a topic, and be flexible on it and openly have conversations on it, it can be an interesting way of either reinforcing your beliefs and your practice, or it can be something that, you know, maybe you try something new, or you go to a class or a workshop on something you wouldn't have expected to be interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so a good place to focus there, if you don't want to harm animals and you want to start using herbs, is you need to start learning about magical herbalism, because this is where we get a lot of our lore, we get a lot of energy from plants. But you can't start using a plant just because you decided to go to your cupboard and pull out the spices. You really have to connect with that plant. You have to understand the energy of that plant. And this is how we are able to use plants in our magic, is we understand the spirit of that plant. We have the permission from that plant to harvest those petals or, you know, use it in our spell. We don't just dump a bunch of cinnamon in our hand and blow it out the door, because that's what we do every month. Sorry. Maybe I'm throwing a little shade there. But that is a practice that just... it really kind of baffles me, because it is a trend right now, but there's no reverence there. There's no regard for that, the energy within that plant there. It's just viewed as a tool. Again, maybe this goes back to our ancient, you know, roots, that where, you know, animals and tools within our craft are just tools to us. But I think we are a little more conscious than that. I think we, as a society, as a culture, as modern witches, I think we're a little more aware, and we should be, especially if we're working in the liminal, because the beings, the energies that live in the liminal, that help us navigate the liminal, they see what we do. They know what we do. Yeah. And I don't think that they look kindly on us when we just disregard the thing because we think that it's our right or our we're entitled to it somehow.
Are you ready to start living a magical life? Join me in my Patreon community where I'm sharing rituals for every Sabbat and full moon, weekly journal prompts, and new on the new moon articles highlighting new practices from around the world. Joining a community can be the thing you need to keep your practice active and engaging. For more information, visit patreon.com/Elise Wells or follow the community link on seekingnumina.com.
Working with animals is not inherently bad, so we just wanted to end the episode by discussing some non-baneful ways that you can use animal parts for positive effects. And this might still not align with your morality. You know, like vegans might have a different perspective on this than we do, or if, you know, there's a consent issue there too. Even if it's positive magic, like for healing, the animal can't give consent, so maybe you shouldn't do magic to heal them. But personally, I do. One way that I use animal ingredients, the only way I could think of actually, was when I find my cat's whiskers, I love to keep them.
Yeah.
I don't even always know what to do with them, but I like to keep them. And one thing I do with them is I put them in a blessings bag. I have a little satchel, a sachet that I made for my family. So it has a stone that I blessed for both me, and then I have one for my husband, and then I have some of our hair from both of us. And then I have my cat's whiskers in there. So it's just this little blessing that, like, you know, the stones, I'm going to say it's, I don't look at it that often. I refresh it, but it's, you know, it's a solid sachet. So, but I picked ones for prosperity, but also health.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a good view there of the difference. You found the whisker. It is not something you go and yank out of your cat's head, you know?
Good God's no. There's a,
that's horrible to think of. Like, that makes me cringe. But you never know. Like, somebody out there might be doing that. And if you're not in my circle, absolutely not. Because that's not something that the witches I roam with and commune with do. Because we value our animals. We value the living creatures, even the plants around us, they all have this sacredness that I would never violate them in that way. And that's exactly how I view it, that if you're going to actively cause harm, anxiety, you know, stress in an animal for your benefit, you're harming them. And that's not okay. And that's what it really boils down to, is are you causing havoc? Are you being intrusive? Are you being respectful? That's the difference between modern witchcraft and ancient witchcraft. When we get down to it, is the difference in how we interact. And, you know, you don't have to be baneful to get your magic to work. And I think it's actually better when we're not baneful, when we are able to be in alignment with the energy that we need for the working. If we're looking for positive change, then we need to be positive in creating that change. There's of course gray areas that we're going to fall into. Just like Elise said, you know, that liminal space itself is gray, but if we are not aligned with the energies that we're trying to work with, for one, and the energies that we inherently hold true with our values within ourselves, then we are not going to have effective magic. And, you know, finding cat whiskers, finding feathers, finding even fur and that sort of thing, you know, on a hike, or I have a great story, actually. This will absolutely demonstrate when an animal part comes to you and when you should use it. So I'm in my garden. I'm, you know, finishing up some gardening. And I'm just standing there. This was several years ago. And I was just staring at something, like maybe surveying my work, I guess. And literally out of nowhere, a red-tailed hawk feather came floating out of the sky and planted itself quill side down in front of me. That was a clear message that that was a gift for me. And I still have that feather. It's still here. It was in my yard, fell right in front of me. And that is an example of when we are gifted the tools that we need to use. You know, I didn't go hunt down the hawk and pull the feather out. Same with my cat whiskers. I have a jar of cat whiskers. And I don't go around and, you know, restrain my cat to pull out the whisker type thing. There, on social media, there is, you know, this debate of drowning mice for spells. To me, that would be absolutely not okay. Absolutely not. I would never do that because that does not align with my beliefs. It does not align with my core values. And it is harmful to that animal. So to me, that just completely nullifies the spell. You have just destroyed any and all energy that you're trying to create with that spell because you have just created an anxiety, a harm that will reflect on you. And that's where we really have to look at our practice and how we conduct ourselves. Merry meet,
merry part,
and merry meet again. Thank you for joining us on the Magic Kitchen podcast. Please visit my website, leandrawitchwood.com, for news, information, and more episodes.
I'm Elise Wells, and I can be found at Seeking Numina on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and seekingnumina.com. That's Seeking, N-U-M-I-N-A.